At school, the little that a lot of us did learn about the first Australians were that they were hunter-gatherers, nomads, people who moved around the landscape. But that centuries-old notion that the first Australians didn't farm the land they occupied is now being challenged by a growing body of work from historians. The latest is a new book from award-winning Indigenous author Bruce Pascoe. He draws on the diaries of early explorers to provide evidence that Aboriginal people across the continent were sowing, harvesting, irrigating and storing. The book called Dark Emu, in the book Dark Emu, Bruce Pascoe argues that systems of food production and land management have been blatantly understated in modern retelling of early Aboriginal history. Bruce Pascoe joins us from East Gippsland this morning. Bruce, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Thank you very much.
Bruce, let's start with what our history books do teach us about the Aboriginal population that were here before white man came. Does it only really suggest a hunter-gatherer lifestyle?
I haven't read any books that suggest that it wasn't a hunter-gatherer society. And so I was surprised about 6 years ago when I read a book by Rupert Gerritsen, which was talking in terms of agriculture as being conducted by Aboriginal people. And I'm very indebted to the book that he wrote, which had to be published in England, incidentally, because he opened up a whole new area. I went to the book, or I was Googling for Aboriginal agriculture when I found the book, because I'd kept on finding references to large villages which were there to take advantage of grain fields that had been sowed and irrigated. And I thought, that doesn't sound like hunter-gathering to me.
Large villages. So tell us what you have unearthed. What kind of agricultural and land management practices you have found through your research were being undertaken by Indigenous Australians?
Well, when I finished writing my previous book, Convincing Ground, I was surprised to have this extra body of material that I'd been gathering about agriculture. And so I thought, this is going to be a surprise to a lot of Australian people. So how am I going to explain this? And the best explanation of all was through the words of the Australian explorers, because everyone loves a good explorer, and they're revered in Australian history. So all I did was read the explorers' diaries. And if you read those diaries with an expectation that you're going to find something about Aboriginal land use, you'll find it.
And what did you find? What did they describe?
Well, Charles Sturt was nearly dead in what he later became known as the Sturt Stony Desert, and he climbed over one last sandhill. His horses could only walk in a straight line. They all stumbled down this sandhill and were greeted by 400 Aboriginal people who offered them roast duck and cake and well water.
Cake?
Cake made from the grain that those people had been harvesting in the ephemeral riverbed of Warburton. It was an extraordinary occasion, and Sturt talks at great length about the resources of the people and how they were manipulating the land to grow this grain.
So there you have evidence that Indigenous Australians were growing grain, they were making flour, they were processing food, presumably they were storing that fruit. You made reference already to villages, large villages, as you say, flying in the face of the hunter-gatherer tag. But I noticed something you said there. You say if you read these diaries with an expectation of this kind of land use. So your thesis in the book, I think, is that the hunter-gatherer tag was, I think, to quote you, a convenient lie promulgated by colonisers who ignored the possibility of prior Indigenous possession of the land. So what your point is, you're saying that it suited us to think of them and categorise them as hunter-gatherers because that meant they weren't putting down roots on this land that the European colonisers were going to take. Is that your point?
It is exactly that the Europeans were usurping those agricultural lands for their cattle and sheep. In Victoria, the sheep came off the boats from Tasmania and walked straight to the yam paddocks and ate them out. And then they would go to another yam paddock and eat it out. That destroyed the Aboriginal economy in a matter of months. And yam doesn't recover from the way the sheep eat it because they crop it very close to the ground. So that just disappeared. It was far greater problem for Aboriginal people than smallpox or war or any of the things that impacted on them, simply the loss of food.
But what evidence do you have, Bruce, to support this notion that it was a deliberate lie, if you like, promulgated by colonisers, rather than a failure of observation?
Look, I don't know that it was a deliberate lie, mm-hmm. but people like Sturt and Mitchell were very well-meaning people, but they had it in their mind that the Aboriginal people were going to be displaced by Europeans. Sturt was buying up land in his newly discovered journeys. His brother was doing the same. Mitchell was a town planner at heart and was dreaming up all these wonderful towns that were going to be built for Europeans on the lands of Aboriginal people, even though they had real affection for some of the aspects of Aboriginal life and real admiration of their building skills and agricultural skills. They had it in their mind that this was going to have to fall aside in the path of European people. Mm. So they may not have been deliberately misleading the public as determined that the European way of life would win.
There is also proof of a nomadic lifestyle within Indigenous Australians. We know that existed. We know that because of the sacred sites and that some of the ceremonies meant tracking through across country, through to sacred sites for different ceremonies. We know that because of things like song lines. So we know there was that lifestyle as well.
Yeah, there was. It was a complicated lifestyle. It wasn't easy to classify. People were moving around the country. Not all people were sedentary. The people at Lake Conda may have been. The people at Brewarrina may have been. But in other parts of the country, people would have had at least two residences to take advantage of seasonal crops and also to visit country. And that is still going on in Australia, even down in southern New South Wales, where I live. The sacred sites are still being visited, still being respected. So there was movement going on in Australia then, as it is now, but at the same time, agricultural practice was common.
Bruce, it's clear from your book and your work you've done in Dark Emu, you think that the curriculum, really, we need to change what we're teaching people about the Aboriginal Australians and how they were living in this country before European colonisation. And you also question why the world flocks to see something like Stonehenge, the Stonehenge structures in England, but there's little interest in what are considered to be the oldest human constructions on Earth, the 40,000-year-old stone fish traps at Brewarrina in New South Wales. Why do you think there's no great appreciation of Australia's ancient heritage?
Well, I would hate to think that it is a deliberate refusal to engage with Aboriginal Australia or to engage with Aboriginal achievement in Australia, but I'm really at a loss to explain why something as remarkable as the Brewarrina fish traps has never received much attention in the country. As you said, Stonehenge is everyone's favourite. Mm. People go to Angkor Wat in Southeast Asia as almost like a religious ritual.
Yeah.
And yet we have these things in Australia, and there are many of them, and they're unvisited.
Mm.
If it was in Texas, you'd have a Greyhound bus going there every quarter of an hour. I don't know what it is, but we need to have a different conversation with Aboriginal Australia in this country, and we have to start in the schools.
Okay.
And don't read one book, please read Dark Emu, but don't read it alone. Read across a range of writers and make up your own mind, because I believe the evidence is there.
All right, Bruce, look, thank you very much for joining us.
Good on you. Thank you very much, Fran.
Bruce Pascoe is an Indigenous author. His latest book, Dark Emu, is published through Magabala Books. And if you happen to live in Melbourne and you want to hear more from Bruce, he'll be at Readings Bookshop in Carlton on the 22nd of April.